are listening to the Punk News Podcast number 299.5. And welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. Next week is episode 300. And we've got some killer guests lined up for all you lucky ducks, you, all you lucky little chirpers, all you lucky little rabbits. We've got a killer episode lined up for you next week, so be sure to tune in. We're going to have a lot of live acts, a lot of cool interviews, a lot of cool people. Punk News Podcast number 300 is going to be a bonanza. But this week is Punk News Podcast number 299.5. And here with me, first of all, is everybody's favorite news editor, the person that is both cheerful and dark, the person that is both light and darkness, wind and sands, earth, wind, and fire. We are here with news editor Sammy Barrett. Sam Barrett, how are you today?
I am great. It's, I guess, a very good and not dark time.
It is not a dark time.
Not right now.
Well, that's good.
I'm on the podcast.
But the podcast is always a party, and here we are with the party maestro himself, the riot starter, the funky monk. We are here with managing editor Adam White. Adam White, I hear your computer is going through a dark period in its own time span.
John, everything's falling apart. I don't understand, first of all, how this isn't episode 300, or more specifically, why last episode wasn't 300, but I enjoy that we are... we're making this anniversary happen on our own terms, like math be damned. And that's great. You know,
well, to be fair, episode 200 wasn't technically episode 200. Episode 200 was about episode 202 or 203, to be fair. So listen, decide your world. Don't let your world decide you. If there's any greater punk statement, I cannot think of one. And speaking of great punk statements, our fellow Joe, 12-year-old Joe, the 12-year-old punk rocker, has written into us again to let us know about his punk rock adventures. But before I read his email, Sam, we've got a 12-year-old punk rocker. His name is Joe. He's in a band. I think he's promoting shows. He's 12. He's in the punk scene. What advice do you have for the 12-year-old punk rocker, Joe? I don't know if we should call him Joe, Lil Joe, Big Joe. What's your advice for Joey Jojo?
I guess not to burst your, you know, like optimistic bubble, but, you know, keep on trucking and do whatever you do for the passion of punk.
Well, there you have it. Adam White, what do you think we should give Joe's nickname? What should Joe's nickname be? 12-year-old Joe?
I mean, being a Trailer Park Boys fan, I kind of want to call him J-Rock. But also, as fucking cool as I think Joe is, do we know Joe's not fictional? Like, do we know Joe's not like a 35-year-old guy that's decided that he's going to pose as a 12-year-old and try to catfish the podcast because, I don't know, people get off doing that kind of thing?
Look, well, I mean,
has he asked you for money, John? Have you given Joe money?
I have not given Joe money, but I'm not going to ask for pictures to confirm who he is, because I'm pretty sure that breaks some kind of legal ground or something, which I don't want to cross. So I'll take Joe's word at it. And if our face is red because we had belief in the youth of punk rock, because we believed in the youth of today, we had faith in the youth of today. If we are damned because of it, well, then that's just the path I'm going to have to walk down, Adam White.
All right. I'll let you do this.
So this is from Joe. Hey guys, quick question. Can you send me $75? My PayPal at... No, I'm kidding. This is from Joe. Hey guys. So to give you a quick update, my newest band, The Guillotine, has recently found a drummer. I, as well as my bass player, will meet with our new drummer, not final, just auditioning, to play a few demos I've recorded. If this works out, expect our EP by at least the fall of 2016. We are a straight-edge hardcore band from Memphis, Tennessee. Not a lot of kids are here into punk rock, so it was quite hard finding a drummer. But with some help from Shangri-La Records and Garner Records, I got an email from a drummer. I can't wait for episode 300. Thanks, Joe.
I like Joe, man.
Even Sam, do you think Joe is real?
I hope Joe is real, and I'm really glad that he's very optimistic about his band, and I hope to hear some real hardcore stuff from him in the future and come to Brooklyn. I guess, you know, everyone should come to Brooklyn.
Sam, are you trying to lure a 12-year-old on the internet?
No, I'm not. I'm just really like into just seeing new bands recently. So, because I'm not going to Memphis anytime soon. Just saying.
What new bands have you seen lately that are cool?
Let's see. I have to check my calendar. Well, I am going. So this next upcoming weekend, I guess I am going to Wild Fest, which is in Long Island. Which is a festival run by the guys of, you know, Dead Broke, for Rob McAllister, that was in Iron Sheik / Capital / you know, Secret Lives. He passed away recently, so it's kind of a benefit. I have been seeing Couple Hundo, which is an awesome Brooklyn band. They're pretty, you know, cool. Pop punk. Yes, that might be it for recently. Maybe I can think of more. I don't know. I just go to a lot of shows.
Well, there you have it. Sam Barrett always out on the scene. So if you're up in Brooklyn, be on the lookout for Sam Barrett. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And speaking of wild treks, Adam White, I believe you had a wild trek on down to the Apple Store, did you not?
I did. This is the greatest thing that anyone who's listened to this podcast is going to learn about the punk rock world. So I went to the Apple Store because this laptop is fucked up. And I'm sitting there. And John, two things happened that gave me pause. Well, three. One, the girl that was helping me at the Genius Bar there had some really fucking rad tattoos, and I appreciated that. But the things that I found is that, first of all, they're looking at my poor computer here and trying to figure out what's going on. And at one point during all the technical diagnosis of this computer and plugging in all these like weird little like secret tool Apple Store USB dongles that do crazy things to computers that you can't do at home. They're plugging in all these tools. They've got it on the operating table there. And then at one point they flip it over, and I'm one of these people that has my laptop kind of covered in stickers, and they counted them. Like, and I'm watching her, and she's like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And she's like, you know, moving her finger and like counting the multitude of stickers that I've got on there. And I mean, they're not even punk rock stickers. I'm a developer, so developers go to conferences and we get stickers and we put stickers on our laptops. That's what we do. I have a giant Public Image Limited sticker on the back of it, though, so I guess that kind of counts. But
that's cool.
Anyways, though, so she's counting them, and I'm like, what are you doing? And she's like, oh no, we have to do this. I'm like, you have to count the stickers that are on my laptop. I'm like, yeah, we have to write down any distinguishing marks or anything like that before it goes in for repair. I'm like, but you can't just say like covered in stickers. You have to say like 25 stickers that are on there. And she's like, we have to do that. And it made me think, it's sort of like on like a police procedural where like they arrest a guy and they have to like, you know, write down any like identifying tattoos or anything that he has, because like this is the culprit. It was the weirdest thing to me. But more so than that, I also have a big punknews.org sticker. It's on the back of my laptop. And I'm there, and this guy at the Apple Store is like, punknews.org. Yeah, I love that site.
Dude, that's awesome.
And he was one of the Apple guys. And then I was like, thank you. And then he's like, are you punknews.org? And I'm like, yeah, I am punknews.org. Come shake my hand, sir. And it was one of these, like, I don't know. I don't have a lot of, like, moments where I realize that anyone really gives a shit what we do. But every once in a while, someone in real life will be like, hey, I like punk news. And this guy started talking to me about how he goes to like the best new music section on the site to learn about stuff, which is totally fucking weird because I've never been on the best new music section of our site. Like never. Maybe when it was launched, when Aubin emailed me and he was like, I added a best new music section to the site. And I went there and I looked at it and I'm like, okay, so you just accumulated any of the staff reviews with more than 4 stars. That's boring mathematically. I don't care. And I've never gone there again. But apparently, if you didn't know, John, there's a best new music section on the site. And people like to go there to find out what music people like. Yeah, like, did honestly, you fucking know this? Because I didn't know this. Well, I did.
I thought that was like one of the links no one ever goes to, but I guess people do. You know,
and I know. So
I guess because you and I know more about the inner gears than maybe the average person. Like maybe it's more of a mystery box to other people. You know.
Well, maybe it should be advertised again. It's a great tool for, you know, new kids, like your 13-year-old friend.
But John, like usual, when I have the moment to play the celebrity card, no one gave me any money.
Were you like, I'm Adam White? And he's like, holy shit, it's Adam White.
I would just like someone once to be like, holy shit, you're Adam White from Punk News. Here's everything that's in my wallet, and I'm giving you this willfully. Or something, or at least like a 20. $20? Now, the last time I complained for the internet to give me money, I did so on Twitter, and I forget why. I think I threatened someone, and like I threatened the internet in general, and just said like give me $5, and someone fucking PayPal'd me $5. So yeah, it was some. I'm not going to mention him out here, but a punk news fan, I guess, that was on Twitter that found my stupid bullshit amusing, thought it would be funny to actually give me $5, so he PayPal'd me $5. John, and then I transfer that $5 to you because you bought me a record. So there you go. See? That's the circle of life.
It's the circle of life. Well, there you have it.
Why do I feel like I might know this human?
I mean, you probably do because I feel like there's only like 3 people on the internet that give a shit about what we do, so.
Interesting. I will inquire about that later.
Well, they have it. Adam White, get every chance you can get out of $5. Adam White, why is scamming people? Let's play a tune. You can say people's precious time, listening to your own musical tastes.
All right, so I like most people of good character, like fucked up a lot.
And I like a lot of the fucked up side projects and a lot of the weird stuff that these guys do on the side.
So one of the members of Fucked Up is Mr. Jonah Falco.
Now, John, you're a fan of Mr. Jonah Falco.
He is also a member of Career Suicide. We talked about it recently. We recommended suicide last episode to 12-year-old Jared. So anyway, Jonah from Career Suicide Fucked Up. He has a solo side project. I don't know if you ever heard this one. It's called Lonely Wholesome. It is a soft indie rock kind of thing. But you know, don't hold your guns, holster your indie rock rage. Because you, John, were a big fan of Ben Cook's super weird lo-fi AM radio pop. Record under Young Gov that he put out last year called Right for Love.
I'm a fan of pretty much everything all the FWP people do. I ran from being a mega fan. And I think they're all interesting musicians, musicians that all have interesting projects, really.
So this is an interesting softer side of Jonah Falco from Fucked Up and Career Suicide. This band is called Lonely Wholesome. And this song is called Vanity. It comes from the Scotch Tapes and Young Gov Presents Lathe Cut Series Volume 4. So this was something that was released on a Lathe Cut record a handful of years ago. So anyways, this song is called Vanity. It's a few years old. It's by Jonah Falco, and it's cool. So here you go. Chill out. Thank you.
And that was The Lonely Wholesome, which is Jonah Falco bringing you the vanity. Let's get into this week's news. Big news week. Big news week. A big news week at Punk News. They said it would never happen. I said it would never happen. But honestly, I think I have Danzig ESP. And Adam White, do you know why I have Danzig ESP?
Because you incessantly play Samhain songs.
What did I play last week before the Misfits news was announced? Samhain. I even said this is apropos of nothing. Little did I know that mere hours later, the reunification of the, quote, original Misfits, but it's not really the original Misfits, would be announced. I have Danzig ESP. I've got DSP. Anyways, as you all know out there, the Misfits are playing Riot Fest, but it's not the Jerry Jr. and Eric Archie version. It's Glenn Danzig, Jerry only, and Doyle, which is not the original Misfits like you're saying, but it's, you know, kind of the classic Misfits. No one knows who the drummer is going to be. A lot of people talking, a lot of people flying out to Chicago and Denver for the Riot Fest Misfits show. A lot of questions going around. Some of the questions are, can the Misfits be good in a huge stadium? Will the Misfits be good, you know, this far on their career? Is it for the cash? Does Danzig really want to play with Jerry only? Because there's been a lot of bad blood between those guys. And who's going to drum? Sammy B, being that you impressed upon young Joe to not be jaded, where do you stand on the Misfits? Are you a Misfits fan? Are you excited for this reunification of the ghoulish ghouls?
So I may be a little bit on the younger side, so I completely missed a boat on the Misfits, which is completely fine in my books. Hate me if you want. But I would listen to Misfits. I don't hate them. I do think it's kind of rad that they're playing Riot Fest, you know, for the younger people, because I do feel like there are younger kids, you know, getting into the Misfits still. It gives them the opportunity to go see them. You know, there's a lot of bands that I personally love that, you know, has broken up and I will never, ever get to see. So I'm hoping and waiting for reunion. So, you know, hey, go.
John, do you think that it is a better bet to try to see this thing in Denver than in Chicago? Because what if something happens in between the two? I don't mean like what if Jerry only dies on stage? I mean like what if these two somehow come to blows?
You know, that really is a real possibility because, as people might know, Jerry Only is a born-again Christian, and maybe he's not anymore, but for a while he wouldn't shut up about it. And he's like, there's a famous quote I'm going to paraphrase. He's like, the only way I'll let Danzig back in the band is if he, you know, gives himself over to God or something like that. And it's like, A, Danzig doesn't need to be back in the band. It's quite clearly vice versa. And B, it's Glenn Danzig. Like, you knew what you were signing up for 30 years ago. It's like you can't change Danzig. It's like saying, I want the ocean to be different. It's the ocean. It's time immemorial, you know? So the answer is, should someone go out to Denver or Chicago? I'm saying you should. I mean, if it absolutely makes no difference to you, go to Denver because A, it'll be the very first performance, which is always magical. I saw the second or third Flag performance, and it was magical. It really was. And also, I don't think anything's going to happen because there's a lot of money on the table. Even if they hate each other, I think they're good. Like, listen, I who knows what they're getting? I gotta think. Danzig's clearing at least a mil for this. You know what I mean? I could be wrong, but I mean, Danzig doesn't need Jerry only. Like, Danzig brings in way more money than Jerry only. So if Danzig brings Jerry only on into the Misfits or however you want to put it, he's giving up half his money or maybe even a third. That's a lot of money to giving up that he doesn't like. Misfits obviously bring in more money than Danzig, but from Glenn Danzig's perspective, do Misfits bring in more money times half than Danzig? You see what I'm saying, Adam White?
Yeah.
So there's got to be a lot of money on the table. So I think he's. I wouldn't be worried about that. If I were you, if I wouldn't fly to Denver. If it doesn't make a difference, I would fly to Denver to see the first Misfits show. But I wouldn't worry too much about that. My concern is, will there be a show after the second? I actually think maybe not. Although I'd love for this to go on. Go ahead, Adam White. You weren't done yet. Go ahead.
I don't know. I'm just speculating on all the various ins and outs of this. I mean, the one thing that I think is really interesting to see is how, and here's what I'm, what I, the impression that I get looking at the internet is that every time I say the impression that I get, can we like cut in some Boston's? That's the impression that I get.
The impression. Anyways, sell out with me tonight. Sell out.
Is this the let's say is this the popular critical redemption of Jerry Only?
Yes, it is.
Because like Danzig, of course, has always had a huge amount of people that had kind of, you know, that had followed him post Misfits when he was doing all the solo stuff. And even when Danzig got goofy, I mean, everyone remembers the infamous meme of Danzig buying kitty litter that was flying around on the internet.
Listen, the guy can't take care of his pets.
I know.
He should be commended for that.
And then there was a meme that went around for a little while about how, like, Danzig bought this house in my neighborhood and the front yard is full of bricks. You remember that one?
Yes, I remember that. So that was actually true, though.
It was, but like, well, why pick on the guy? He's got bricks. Where are you going to put him? Anyways, despite some of the funny stuff, Danzig's been the one that's always retained the, like the critical love. Like the Misfits were a lesser act for Danzig not being in them, and Jerry Only sort of had people's ire for, like, I guess, continuously beating the dead horse and not letting the cash cow go or whatever, right? But now that this reunion is happening and you look at it and it's like, well, this reunion, despite the fact that, oh, Jerry Only is this washed up person that won't let the band die, this couldn't be without Jerry Only. Like, if it was just Danzig calling himself the Misfits again and Jerry Only wasn't involved, it would be weird. Like, you have to have the two of them to sort of make this thing work. So everyone is fucking stoked about the Misfits for the first time really in my adult life. Everyone is stoked about the Misfits. Like, the entire time that I have been, you know, into music, it's been, you know, people talking shit about the Misfits or people saying, well, you know, they were amazing back in the day, but then all this bullshit happened. And then, right, like, so the first time in my adult life, people are legitimately stoked about something that is happening with the Misfits again. And Jerry Only is sort of like a key component of that. So is he going to come out of this where all of a sudden everyone's going to be like, hey, man, Jerry Only is not that bad. He kept the fire burning and then finally Glenn came back. Like, I feel that he's like, I haven't seen anyone throwing shade on Only for this. So that's interesting to see because he's usually the one that everyone is always, you know, chipping at. So that's interesting. You agree?
I actually do agree, and I thought of an interesting parallel. Consider Jerry Only as the Jesus Christ figure. You know, if the Misfits ended in 1983, then would there be a Misfits reunion now? The answer is probably not, because Jerry Only would have been off, you know, working at the factory or maybe doing music that no one cares about. And people probably would remember the Misfits a little bit less just because the Misfits aren't around, even angering people. Like, in a way, it's easy to forget about something if you're not positive or negative rather than if you're angry. So because Jerry Only was able to endure 20 years of ridicule for, you know, making, you know, I guess, diluting the Misfits, he, only because of him keeping people's hatred towards him alive, are we able to actually have a Misfits reunion. You see what I'm saying?
Well, I also think the fact that, like, you know, like the internet, I guess, took this news and is going crazy about it is because the fact that Danzig and Jerry Only had that relationship where it was, like, so back and forth that, like, now they're getting on a stage together, like, what the hell happened, you know? Like, people are probably trying to figure this out, but don't really care, really, because the news that they're playing together is bigger than whatever happened between the two of them.
Do you think like, maybe they don't hate each other that? Because you can't believe everything Jerry Only says. He's very much a PR kind of guy. And he's in his interview with Rolling Stone, he said, we went in for a mediation. A mediation is where you try to settle a lawsuit between the two parties. But if you don't settle, then you go to trial. But it's not binding. It is binding if you signed a settlement agreement. But if you don't, then you just go to trial. The story Jerry Only says is they went in to try to mediate to settle a lawsuit. And they walked out planning to play shows together. Do you think, like, like, after all these years, they realize that deep down they are friends, or at least comrades, and that there is something special between them playing together? Or do you think it's just PR?
Well, you know what? Like, I'm hoping that, you know, as time goes on and people do age, you know, you let go of things, and, you know, I'm sure they're at better terms now, hence why they're doing this. I don't know if they're, like, best friends, you know? But, you know, I do think that they're at a better place.
I mean, a big bag of money goes a long way, but... But I mean, I would like to think that, like, there's maybe, like, a big bag of money plus, like, a little glint in Glenn's eye that, like, you know, for old time's sake, let's you know, take the old girl out again. So, like, I hope there's an element to that, and it's not, like, completely cynical or money based. So,
do you think having Jerry only in the band makes it? I mean, I've seen Danzig with Doyle, and it's all do Misfits tunes, and it's amazing. Do you think having Jerry on stage, if you closed your eyes, would make it even better? I mean, now Jerry only takes a lot of hate. And people say he's not that great of a bass player. From a technical standpoint, he's probably not, but he's so big, and his arms are so massive, and he probably hits that bass harder than pretty much any other bassist there is. He does have a unique sound. Adam White, Sam, do you think from a pure art perspective, not a nostalgia perspective, not a marketing perspective, from a pure art perspective, Jerry only would make this performance greater than were he not there, than say were Todd Youth there or somebody?
I think you need him there. He's like, it would be like the Fantastic Four without the Thing, right? Like, you can't, he is visually such a part of the band. And I mean, I don't know, like musically, I mean, whatever, it's punk rock. I don't care how good someone is really when it comes down to it. You know, that's an element of it, but like the band's a known quality, and only his playing is good enough for the Misfits. So I'm okay with that.
Oh, but see, I would counter Adam. I would say not only is he good enough, I would actually argue it is in some degrees essential, because
I'm not talking shit on him at all. I'm saying that I'm saying that the argument about like whether there are better bassists out there is completely moot to me.
Well, I'd say there aren't better bassists for the Misfits. You see.
All right. I sort of agree with you then.
Like, when you hear Doyle and Jerry, like, they don't play their instruments like other people do. Like, they don't even play their instruments. They bash their instruments. Like, listen to Evil Live, and it's, like, just so noisy and so chaotic and so explosive and so violent sounding. It's like, no other band sounds like that, you know, just because they just hit it so hard. They're so massive. And I hope the live performance is like that, and not like kind of modern Misfits shows where they play the song super fast, but not super violent, if you will. I'll be interested to see what it actually sounds like. And I hope they put out a live recording. Although maybe they won't, because no one buys music anyway anymore. So I don't know.
It'll be circulated amongst the internet, I'm sure.
but I mean, the same with Flag is like, it's cool to have a soundboard recording, but I want a professionally produced live sound recording so I can really enjoy it, you know?
Yeah, that'd be ideal. Like, I would want something on, like, my iPod where I could just, like, jam out to it, like, on my way to work or something, you know?
All right, I guess the Misfits are back. This is going to be something we're probably going to be talking about for a while, so let's hop from here to the next big story that happened this week. So this much talked about Against Me show has happened in North Carolina. So on stage, Laura Jane Grace, she burned her gift certificate in protest of the HB2 bill, the transgender bathroom bill, I guess, that has been causing all of this fury and hand-wringing and debate and, you know, artists canceling shows and this and that that's happened. So anyways, Laura Jane, she burned her birth certificate on stage, and she shouted goodbye gender and set the thing ablaze. There is video of it that you can find over on the internet there. It's on Twitter. So this took place. This happened. It made some waves, made some news. As we talked about in past shows, Against Me decided to play this show as a form of protest, which was really different than a lot of people that were not playing in North Carolina as a form of protest. But of course, they have a bit of a unique perspective with Laura Jane Grace in the band. So anyways, John, this happened here. What's your read on it?
Well, people actually, I had the first, I didn't put this publicly, but I'm like, you know, you can replace a birth certificate for $12, but it's a point of symbolism. It's not like, obviously he's inspired by burning draft cards. Burning draft cards was a statement because it was illegal to do. You could be arrested for it. And draft cards were technically government property, not people's own property. Whereas a birth certificate is considered your property and you can do what you want with it. You can't forge them though. And so burning it isn't quite as illegal as it is burning a draft card. However, from an artistic standpoint, I think it's interesting and I think it's clever. And people are just, you know, you see a lot of people like, you know, it's like I miss against me when they were about the music, not about Laura Jane Grace's gender. But against me's music has always been personal. This is just the latest phase of the personal things that Laura Jane Grace and the band is going through. And so I thought it was a interesting symbol. And honestly, this is the kind of stuff, I mean, you saw how quickly this got passed around the internet. So if the intent is to challenge this bill, then playing live and doing this artistic statement was an incredibly effective tool to challenge this bill, because people that did not know about Against Me or only knew a little bit about them certainly are more likely to see this than if Laura Jane just said, I don't like this bill. And also interesting, I thought this was interesting too, is, you know, I think of punk rock as a pretty intelligent place, but man, on these kinds of stories on the Facebook, all the nasties really come out, don't they? It's like, how can you be a fan of punk rock, but then I guess have such a vile anger towards certain core tenets of punk rock? In one respect, which I respect, because I always think people should think for themselves. You know, but on the other hand, they're just nasty people. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. But it's the same thing with, you know, white power skinheads. Like, how can you be a white power skinhead but be a punk rocker? Like, a core tenet of punk rock is thinking for yourself. And you're clearly not thinking for yourself. A core tenet of punk rock is respecting people, unless you subscribe to the Gigi Allen kind of thing. And you're clearly not respecting other people when you say these nasty things about trans people or other people. So I just find it interesting that the nasties do come out during these periods. I have no answer to that.
Well, yeah. I guess, like, you know, the internet will be the internet, and there are a lot of different types of people that does listen to punk rock that have their own beliefs of things, and they will come out in droves sometimes to talk about certain things, especially high profile cases like this.
Yeah, I think one of the other things to think about with this too, and I guess there was some criticism of people that were, I mean, the criticism when I see it online that's you know, bigots being bigoted, that's not really interesting to me, because of course they're going to do that. The reactions that I found, I guess, worthy of comment here were people that were just like snidely looking at that and just going like wow, how edgy, right? Like making fun of the whole thing, right? Like, she didn't take out a press release and say that she was going to burn her birth certificate on stage. She did, and someone's cell phone cammed it and put it on Twitter. So this is just a thing that happened as part of a show that people were reacting to. And yeah, the show was noteworthy, so that, you know, doing something like this was going to get out. But like, you know, it wasn't something where Laura Jane Grace went on the news and was like tomorrow night at 8 p.m. everybody tune in, because I'm going to do the craziest shit right here on stage, and it's going to blow your fucking mind. And then she showed up and burned her gift certificate. Like, that didn't happen. Like, it was not staged that way. So to me, it's a perfectly reasonable, you know, act of protest as part of that show and as part of doing that. And I don't get the cynical read on it. Like, I get the bigoted read, because bigots are bigoted, right? I don't get the, like, we got to sneer at this read, but hey, I don't know.
Do you think it actually was her birth certificate?
I don't.
Because, I mean, like, isn't Laura Jane Grace from Gainesville, and now she lives in Chicago, correct?
Yeah, but whatever your birth certificate is, it should be the same, right?
No, it is, but I'm saying, so she, I mean, presumably she didn't carry it around with her on tour, so she would have had to have it mailed to her. Now, I'm not saying that's impossible, but I'm saying that's a lot of steps.
It's very possible she might have brought it on tour. It's very possible that she might have a duplicate. You know, again, like you said, you could go out and get a duplicate from, you know, the government or whatever.
The government, man.
Hey, I used to be one of these people that always had my birth certificate with me. But that's
really
that's not as weird as it sounds. There was a
that's dangerous, dude.
No, I know it is, but that's why I don't do it anymore. I don't know about American certificates or anything like that, but like for a while, so in Canada it was always like your birth certificate was like a little paper card, right? Like about the size of like a credit card, but you'd actually like punch it out of a piece of paper, so it had those little like those little nubs were like they perforate it so you can pull it out. But mine didn't. Mine was a laminated one because they made them that way for a little while. And then they stopped like right at like a couple years after I was born. Cause I remember that or not a couple months, sorry, after I was born. Cause there were people that were like in my class with me that had these non-laminated birth certificates. And I had this great laminated birth certificate. And so it would fit in my wallet. So it was for a while, I was just using it as like another piece of ID, although no one ever asked for it. So I don't really know what I was doing, but it was on me. Right. But even now, like they don't do that. Like my kids, their birth certificates are like big, like full page sheets of paper, like the intent is like, don't put this in your wallet, like put it in a filing cabinet somewhere. So I don't know. It's like what fill me in here, like what's an American birth certificate?
So an American birth certificate is a piece of paper. It I think ranges in size depending on when you were born and where you were born, because mine's is a little on the like I guess like it's 8x7 or something like that. Now like birth certificate is like an entire, like, you know, 8x11 piece of paper. And you have to go to like, you know, a government office to go get it. If you need a duplicate, that is.
I'm just imagining, you know, Adam White's time in the homeroom. Hey guys, let's compare birth certificates. Wow, that's a neat one, Adam.
My birth certificate was fucking awesome. It still is. I still have it. John, it was like a little bit bigger than a credit card, a little bit thinner than a credit card. It had like this cool, like bluish map of Ontario on the back of it. Like that was quality shit. So don't knock it. Don't knock it till you try it. You should come up here, John, get yourself born in like the early part of 1982 and you'll get one.
Well, I'll do that. Speaking of quality shit, Sammy B, do you have a quality tune for us to play?
Oh yeah, sure. So I'm really, really into listening to a bit like pop punk recently for some strange reason. And there's a really rad band in Brooklyn called Couple Hundo. So we're going to play their track, Prescription Sunglasses.
We'll be right back.
And that was Prescription Sunglasses by a couple of hundo. And speaking of pop punk, Mikey Erg, people have been, there's been a rumor about it, this album, for about 3 years, maybe even more. But finally, Mikey Erg has announced his first full band solo album. It's going to be out June 24 on Don Giovanni Records. He plays most of the instruments on it. I think a couple of people play some guest instrumentation. I think it was produced by Jeff Rosenstock of Bomb the Music Industry. This comes off the tails of the reunion of the Ergs. Sam, Adam, are you guys Mikey Erg fans? Are you guys excited about the album? And what did you think of the opening track, Come See About Me? And the album, of course, is called Tentative Decisions.
I got into Mikey Erg, I guess, later in the Erg, whatever you want to call it. They're cool. They're not a band that I listen to every day, but I would definitely listen to them. I did listen to the track, and I did find it very Erg-like, and I did like it. So I would definitely go check them out.
Yeah, this is super exciting for me. I was a fan of the Ergs when they were around. I think I, like everyone, have decided that like Mikey Erg is one of these people that is just like an unassailably pleasant presence in the punk scene, I guess. Like, I don't know if that came out the right way, but everyone loves Mikey Erg, and everyone loves the bands that Mikey Erg are in and the bands that Mikey Erg associates with. And I've never heard anyone talk much shit about Mikey Erg, even people that aren't really a fan of the Ergs when they were around. So yeah, this is cool. I like seeing him come back and take a little bit of the spotlight. I mean, we tried to make him the drummer for Against Me, and that didn't seem to fly. But you know,
no, it did fly. He got a tryout. It did fly. Listen, you can lead a horse to water.
All right,
dude. How awesome would it have been if he did become the Against Me drummer? Like, how awesome would that have been?
Pretty awesome.
they didn't do it because they're like, if we do this, Punk News is gonna not shut up. And so yeah,
and in their defense, Adam, we probably would still be talking about it today if we had.
We're still talking about it right now, right? So I don't know, but yeah, so anyways, everyone loves Mikey Erg. This song was cool. I thought it was completely adorable how it ends with all these just like blah blah blahs at the end of it. So you know, super quirky and fun, like you would expect Mikey Erg stuff to be. So yeah, I'm stoked to hear this. And you know, Don Giovanni does very little wrong lately, so this will, you know, one more thing for them. Can you guys hear that? It sounds like my cat is in the next room, like digging a hole with a shovel.
Maybe your cat's out to get you.
I don't know. Like my computer's fucking up. The cat's fucking digging a hole with a shovel. I don't know what's going on, John.
Well, maybe the cat really loves you and wants to be right next to you, or wants to be in the podcast.
Yeah, it's like, I really love you. I'm gonna go 25 feet away and just destroy the carpet over here.
Well, speaking of people that destroy the carpet, Fat Records, they're putting out another comp. It's technically not one of the Fat comps, or maybe it is technically one of the Fat comps. Although Fat Records have put out non-Fat comps before. It's called Mild in the Streets. Of course, paying homage to the famous Circle Jerks tune, Wild in the Streets, which of course is a cover of a Garland Jeffries tune, which of course is not actually a real band. The comp is called Mild in the Streets. It is 16 acoustic songs, 5 which are unreleased, plus a bonus track of the orchestral recording of The Decline by Baz and his orchestra. A lot of people have a lot of opinions on this. You know, I kind of think maybe the Punk Guy Goes acoustic era is a little bit over, but a lot of people still love the acoustic stuff. People are loving that Sam Scorch guy. People are loving, well, you know, Brendan Kelly. All that acoustic guy stuff is still kind of hot. Adam White, are you going to be picking this up? Are you into the acoustic guy comps? You like all those honky tonk guys up in Canada. They used to be in Attack in Black or something.
Yeah, I do like all those honky tonk guys up in Canada. This is
Don't you love the phrase honky tonk? I love the phrase honky tonk.
Yeah, I do. Dan Romano from Attack in Black has decided that he's going to call his basic, like, all he does in it these days is, well, he has a new album out that's really fucking psychedelic, but like outside of that, he's just been playing like Lee Hazelwood songs basically. And he's decided that he's going to call his whole sound, his whole, like, over here, like, he's going to call it Mosey. So that's what he's been calling it. But anyways, so I'm looking at this. I have such a weird relationship with this punk guy goes acoustic stuff because on the one hand, I'm looking at this track list and there's a lot of bands and artists that I like on here, but I look at this and I kind of go, I don't want to listen to this. And I'm not sure what's making me do that. I just like I feel that I know what all of these songs sound like for some reason, even though I haven't heard many of them, and I don't want that. I like when punk guys will do the acoustic thing, but do it with, I want to say that maybe embrace the roots music side of it. Like one of my favorite records of the past few years was the Chuck Reagan and Austin Lucas collaboration called Bristle Ridge. That was it was those two and a handful of like actual bluegrass musicians, and they were fucking playing their hearts out and being awesome and doing amazing songs, and like that really works for me. Do I necessarily want to hear, like, I don't know, like an acoustic song from Matt Skiba or Anti-Flag? I don't know. I don't think so. And there's certain people that I'm looking at this list where, like, of course that band makes sense acoustic. Like Swing and Utters makes total sense. Well, especially because they did so much stuff as Filthy Thieving Bastards that was, like, of the same, of that acoustic kind of stripe. You know, Against Me to some degree makes sense because they had, you know, their whole roots were in that kind of folk punk thing. But I don't know if some of the bands on here I need like an acoustic thing by. So I don't know. It's a weird release because I'm not entirely sure who it's for. And on the one hand, it feels like they just wanted to make they needed a release where they could go put out that symphony version of The Decline, because that's at the end of this. And I almost feel that like they're like someone went and recorded a whole crazy fucking Decline symphony. What do we do with this? And it's almost like they materialized an album around it. Because on the one hand, like, you know, a whole symphony playing a song is not, you know, acoustic guy with a guitar. Like, it's sort of the opposite of that. But I think they kind of looked at it and they said, well, it's not. Distorted angry punk, so maybe it's kind of mild. And then they came up with this kind of odd concept for a record. So yeah, I don't know. I'll have to hear it and render judgment, I guess. But I'm not super sure who this is for at this point.
Wait, Adam, you're not deciding how good it is before hearing a single note? How non-internet of you?
Oh, well, okay. I can be really internet here in that, like, I understand that they are trying to directly riff on the Circle Jerks cover, but the photoshopping on the cover of this is so... It's like nails on a chalkboard. It is just...
Ah, but let me defend the Circle Jerks. That also is photo cutouts. So aha.
Yeah, but I don't know. I've never looked at the Circle Jerks record and thought like and had that. And maybe it's because the Circle Jerks did it with photo cutouts and Fat Wreck has done it with Photoshop. So I don't know. There's something about it that's just, I'm looking at it and it's setting off. I know what it's an homage to. It's super obvious what it's a homage to, but it's just, there's a bad Photoshop trigger in my head right now that is just ringing when I look at this.
Yeah, I think it honestly doesn't bother me. I think it's humorous, you know.
Wait, Adam, are you looking too much into that?
Yes.
It does look like Joey Cape's floating above the ground, though.
Hold on here. All right. I'm looking at here. Here's the difference. Is it, if you look at the Wild in the Streets cover, the original one, yeah, there's photo cutout shit that's in there, of course. But there's also consistent, like, shadows. And I think that's what it is. Is like, everyone on the Wild in the Streets cover is sort of just like, they're one-dimensional cardboards of people that are all floating above the street. And if you look at the Circle Jerks one, there's some depth there. All I'm saying is that this is like a Star Wars versus, you know, Phantom Menace kind of deal that's going on there. I don't know. I'm reading too much into the cover art. I don't want to shit at anything really that Fat Wreck does, because they're doing so much good these days. It's just that, like, I don't know. This is weird. John, you are not a fan of the solo acoustic guy shit at all. So what do you think?
I'm impressed. It looks like they shot the background at the original spot that they shot the original Circle Jerks album at. Because the background building is the same, but some of the other buildings aren't the same. So I think it's the same location, which I think is well done. I'm not too much into the solo. I mean, I can take an acoustic song here or there. I'm just not interested in all punk guys do all acoustic stuff. When I listen to punk rock, I want explosion, danger, crazy music, you know, and I'm just not interested in 15, 16 acoustic tracks.
Sam, what do you think?
I actually really like acoustic music, but it has to be done with a very particular voice and way. I'm very, very particular that way. Lately, I haven't been about everybody doing an acoustic solo project. It's just, you know, maybe I'm just changing and I want louder music or something like that. This compilation, I know my husband's going to definitely buy because of that NOFX decline. So maybe that's who they're marketing to, my lovely husband. but I am interested in, like, you know, like the cover of Stacey D, Bad Cop, Bad Cop, Doing Everything Is Beautiful, which is unreleased. And even like Matt Skiba doing his thing. So, you know, I'm not going to shit on it until I hear it.
Well, there you have it. And speaking of people not shitting on things until they have it, we're going to talk about one of the greatest musicians of all time. But before that, we're just going to play one of his songs. I'll tell you about who it is afterwards. Drinking, how awesome this jam is.
Dollar babe.
And we are back. Adam White, what did we just play?
John, I don't know. What did we just play?
Adam White really doesn't know because he didn't hear it. We played Alice Cooper and Don, the original Alice Cooper group and Donovan doing Billion Dollar Babies. This is, we'll just be quick about this. The original Alice Cooper group is getting back together to record new tracks. It wasn't clear if they're going to record a new album or just some new tunes or if they're even play live. But this is just exciting because the original Alice Cooper group is one of the most important rock bands of all time. Incredibly influential on punk. Sex Pistols, huge Alice Cooper fans. They're contemporaries of the Stooges, both fans of each other's music. Ramones, Alice Cooper fans. Jello Biafra, gigantic Alice Cooper fan. Melvins, big Alice Cooper fan. Nick Cave, big Alice Cooper fan. You name a punk rocker, they're Alice Cooper fans. The Alice Cooper Band was an amazing band. The proto-goth, proto-punk, you name it, so far ahead of their time. Guar before there was Guar. Really, Guar is Alice Cooper 2.0. And so they're getting back together to record some tracks. Who knows if they'll be good, but I think pretty much every Alice Cooper fan would agree that the Alice Cooper Band recordings are superior to the Alice Cooper solo recordings, which are also pretty good. But the Alice Cooper Band recordings are some of the greatest. I mean, it blows me away. I am still amazed by how great the Alice Cooper Band is. That was Billion Dollar Babies. That was one of their greatest tracks. I'm excited. Check it out. If you don't know a whole lot about Alice Cooper, check out the album Killer. Check out Schools Out. Check out Billion Dollar Babies. You will not be disappointed. It is slamming, exciting, weird rock and roll proto-punk. Check it out.
All right, cool. Well, we're going to talk about a couple other quick stories that are happening this week. The one of them is that Titus Andronicus is going to release a live album. They're going to call this thing, it's going to be called Stadium Rock, Five Nights at the Opera. They're writing it with that little plus sign, at symbol, logo thing for the T and the A in stadium. So I don't know.
I think that's cool.
It's cool. I like that they came up with that symbol. I think it's kind of like, it's kind of funny in a old school anarchy symbol way. They just wanted to make this impossible to Google, I guess. But anyways, I guess Google Titus Andronicus live album. Anyways, it's gonna be coming out on July 29th on Merge Records. It'll feature live tracks taken from their most recent album, The Most Lamentable Tragedy, and I'm sure stuff from their earlier things.
So, no, it's all The Most Lamentable Strat.
Oh! I was just reading that and thought it was a typo. Okay, no.
No. It's highly reworked versions of those songs. One half is stripped back, one half is like balls out rocking.
That record is like 37 songs, so I guess it's kind of ripe for reinterpretation in that sense. So
it's only like 12 tracks, I think. It's like 6 and 6 or something like
that. Yeah, so there you go. You know, cutting out the stuff that doesn't work and rethinking it. That's kind of cool. I mean, you imagine the Clash going back and doing like a 12 track Sandinista live thing afterwards. Just making shit up here. John.
Adam.
Culture Shock. Do it.
Culture Shock. They're putting out their first album in 27 years. We talked about it before. We're going to talk about it briefly again. Quiz time. Adam White, who is Culture Shock?
Who is Culture Shock? John, Culture Shock is a spinoff band of the Subhumans, the UK Subhumans, not the Canadian Subhumans. I have to say that by law. Also, along with, Citizen Fish as a spinoff band from the Subhumans.
Indeed. Culture Shock is kind of the reggae version of Subhumans. They're putting out their first album in 27 years. It's called, I can't remember the nuts. I should have put up the article. The album is out this summer via Alternative Tentacles. It's their first album in 27 years. Culture Shock has been reformed for a little while, but no one expected a new album to come out.
It's called Attention Span, guys.
Oh, I'm sorry, Sam. What was that?
It's called Attention Span.
Attention Span, and it's got Dick Lucas, frontman Dick Lucas, R in the front. If you like the Subhumans, you'll love this. You should check this out. It's it's Dick Lucas doing what Dick Lucas does, which is punk-influenced reggae-influenced punk, UK anarcho stuff. And I think it's interesting because I think it's fair to say that the only two continuously running anarcho-punk bands are the Subhumans and Napalm Death. I can't think of any original anarcho-punk bands that are still around. I realize the Subhumans broke up, but they never really broke up. Because there's always Citizen Fish. So I just think it's cool that, I mean, people talk about Crass and Amoebics and Flux of Pink Indians. Like, it was from another era. But there are two bands that were around then that are still doing their thing now, and this is exciting. And I think that's about all we got for tonight's podcast.
Yeah. So this was 299 and a sixth or whatever. If anyone wants to email us, it is podcast@punknews.org. At some point next week, we are going to be doing some wacky stuff for number 300. So be sure to tune in and check that out. And I guess that's all we got, John. I guess like we can go to bed. My computer didn't blow up, so you know, yeah.
Well, listen, next week's going to be a wonderful spiraling chaos, like it always is. It's going to be shambles, but it's going to be shambles in the best possible way. That's how we do things at Punk News. Not even barely holding it together. Things just collapsing and us desperately pulling it back together while it collapses. That's how Punk News rolls. 300 is going to be a ball. I don't know what's going to happen, but hopefully it'll be fun. I know it'll be fun, but I mean, hopefully it'll make at least a little bit of sense.
Maybe.
No one's going to guarantee that. All right, see you guys next week.